This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. It is hour number two. Good, the bad, and the dumb coming up this hour. Jared Dubin, CBS Sports, to talk some NFL as we continue along this morning. There is one statistic that's like in tennis, for example, that I hate. It is that when we go to a tennis tournament and they always show you the wins and losses of an individual, they'll say, like, he's playing in his 20th Wimbledon, and so far he is 28-19. And what it means is he's never won Wimbledon. It means that in 19 appearances, he lost once, right? Whatever how many wins. The key stat is the wins. How many wins per event does this particular tennis player get? It drives me crazy because you can only lose once in going to a tennis tournament. That's it. And likewise in the NFL, there's one statistical comparison that's driving me equally crazy. And that is when we talk about Zach Wilson, for example, or we talk about Trevor Lawrence, and they're throwing interceptions like crazy. Trevor Lawrence already has 5. Zach Wilson threw 4. And they mention things like he only threw 5 in 10 games playing for Clemson in 2020. And I go, okay, so was I supposed to take that and think that he would then in the National Football League throw the same amount? Should I be blown away that the fact that he's playing, I don't know, much better competition than the ACC? I mean, what are we doing with these? Why are we blown away? Why are they eye-popping, right? Urban Meyer never lost 2 games in a season. Yeah, because he's playing college football. He's coaching college football. He didn't inherit a crappy NFL football team like the Jacksonville Jaguars. Now, if he had gone to Rutgers and had done something like that in the Big Ten, maybe we should be surprised. But he inherited Ohio State, and they don't lose very often with or without Urban Meyer. Look, they're at the big boy level now. Let's stop thinking that all of a sudden these are somehow surprising that a rookie quarterback has thrown 5 picks in 2 games. He probably should be throwing 5 picks in 2 games. It's the National Football League, the elite of the elite. And yet we are blown away because they didn't do it in their weak college division.
Wake Up Call continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, it is time for the good, the bad, and the dumb, the Monday edition. So much to get to from the weekend. I don't know how he does it, but he brings you the good of the day. Ron Culver, take it away.
You know what? I really like this story. It's Mookie Betts this past, I think it was yesterday. Yeah,
okay,
it was yesterday.
Yeah, Mookie
Sunday.
Betts.
Mookie Betts. So back up a little bit. Dodgers are playing the Reds in Cincinnati. Reds rookie T.J. Friedl got his first career hit in the 6th inning, which happened to be an opposite field home run.
Yeah.
So a fan caught the ball. Mookie Betts went to the stands, asked for the ball, and told the Reds fan who caught it, "I got you when I get back." And he kept his word. Reds fan gave Mookie Betts the ball the very next inning when Mookie Betts came out there, gave him a signed bat.
Oh, wow. How awesome is that?
So he could give that ball to T.J. Friedl. I'm not sure how to say the last name.
You ever do this where you see somebody, athlete, celebrity, or whatever, do something amazingly good for somebody, and then you go, man, I wish I could. If I had that power, I would love to be able to do it
all the time.
Right? Like, you hear these stories, especially here in Nashville, you hear these stories a lot of, like, a kid had a lemonade stand and, like, Luke Bryan showed up, right? Like, because he was running a lemonade stand for his sick brother or something. They have, like, some special story. And, like, some country star will find out about it, or a Tennessee Titan will find out about it. And he'll show up and go, hey, how much for the lemonade? And they go, $1. And they go, well, keep the change. And they give him, like, $1,000 or something like that. Right?
Yeah.
Like, things like that. And you think to yourself, how awesome would it be if I could just give a kid a batting helmet or something like that, and like make the kid's day. How great is that? A signed bat. How unbelievable is that?
I mean, good on the fan, too, to say, hey, you know what? I'm going to trust him. You know, it's the opposite team. That's what makes makes the story really worth it, too. It's the opposite team. You know, tosses the ball down to him. A souvenir that everyone covets.
Sure.
I mean, it's, you know, I haven't caught a major league foul ball or a home run ball. I would love to.
If you caught somebody's first home run or first hit, would you give it back? Because I think I would.
I think I would because that's a memento. That's something that this kid, you know, this TJ Friedel.
Yeah.
He can put into his trophy case at home. You know, we don't know if he's going to have a great career. We don't know if is he going to be the next Babe Ruth and have, you know, 700 plus home runs? No, we don't know that.
And let's be honest, a lot of these teams will take care of you. They usually give you something pretty cool, like in return for it, because it doesn't happen very often.
Yeah, but honestly, the Reds organization probably would have found the fan and went after him and said, yo, we'll give you tickets. Here's gear. Here's this. But the fact that Mookie Betts took it upon his own, I mean, promptly, as he was running off the field, threw it into the Reds dugout. But then came back with a signed bat. It's a signed bat. How awesome is that?
How great is that? Good for Mookie Betts. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
All right, what's the bat of the day?
Well, I'm going to stick with baseball because sometimes the dog days of summer are just that, the dog days of summer. And I'm going to highlight two teams that are definitely trending in the wrong direction. The first one are the Padres.
Man, they stink.
They are just three games above 500, 3.5 games back for the wild card, the final wild card spot, because the Dodgers pretty much have that locked in, or the Giants, if the Dodgers and Giants can somehow flip-flop. But the reason why I'm bringing up the Padres is because it was caught, I think it was either Friday night or Saturday night, Tatis Jr. and Machado caught having some words in the dugout.
The two big megastars of this team.
And it's rumored that Machado yelled at Tatis, "It's not about you."
Oh, goodness gracious. What are they, in a marriage, for crying out loud? What are we talking about here?
So, you know, the wheels are definitely unraveling in San Diego, which a team, I mean, for whatever reason, they can still beat the Dodgers. So...
Is there a consensus among the baseball elite? We probably have to get a Steve Gardner on. What exactly happened to that franchise?
I don't know.
We're not playing rotisserie baseball. I get it. We're not playing, you know, Stratomatic RBI 2021 video game baseball. I get it. We're playing with human beings, and human beings are prone to have slumps and errors and make mistakes. But this team should be nowhere near the toilet they're in right now.
I mean, just three games above 500. They haven't had a major injury, right?
They could have rolled out anybody and been around that.
Yeah.
Right? Instead of signing Machado to a $300 million deal. Right? I get Tatis. You will sign a young star. I get that. But the kind of money that they spent and the kind of deals that they made.
Yeah.
I mean, they got Blake Snell, for crying out loud, off Tampa Bay.
I think, who's only pitching six innings still.
I know. God. But I don't know. I mean, they just fell apart.
Now, the other team is the Yankees.
Yankees.
Because they're trending, they've been trending in the wrong direction. The Yankees have been a weird team.
They won 11 in a row at one point this summer.
And now they're like five of their last 10.
Yeah.
And so they're 16 games above 500. Not too shabby. A game and a half for that final wild card spot. Again, not too bad. But yesterday, Gerrit Cole was booed because he couldn't last more than like two or three innings.
Yeah, he pitched like I would have pitched if they gave me the chance to pitch for the Yankees.
I mean,
he got
booed.
Rocked yesterday.
Booed. Yankee fan has no patience.
They are awful. This guy's given – Gerrit Cole has what, 15 wins on the season or something like
that?
Yes. Like, he's given you a good season. He had one absolutely abysmal outing and against Cleveland – and then they boo him. It's like, if you play for the Yankees, it's like you fail 7 out of 10 times you go to the plate if you're a good major league hitter, right?
Yes.
You're a Hall of Famer if you fail 7 out of 10 times. And the Yankee fans don't put up with any of that nonsense.
No.
I can't have one bad, it wasn't my night, I may actually be a little under the weather kind of game.
Yeah, maybe my arm's a little sore, a little tired. I just didn't have that extra oomph on my fastball. No, you don't get that.
There's no excuses.
You got to come out like a machine.
Out.
You got to be Drago every single time you jump on the mound.
Absolutely. You don't get to have a bad day. in Yankee Town. My goodness. I mean, the Yankees better be thankful for that extra wild card spot because they're in the, they're
yeah, but they may not get it.
They may not get it. You're right.
I mean, there's no way they're catching.
Gerrit Cole is 15-8 with an ERA of 3.
Yeah,
and they booed him.
15. I mean, the Yankees awesome. Are 9 games out of first place behind Tampa. They're not catching them. Boston and Toronto, I think, are the top two for the wild card spot right now. Yeah.
Can I just tell you how ignorant I am when Joe Maddon had the Rays playing really well and remember back in the day, and I remember going, like, they went to the World Series, right? They lost to Philadelphia, I think, like in 2009 or something like that. Joe Maddon had the Rays pretty good, and then when he left to go be with the Cubs, led them to the World Series. Now he's with the Angels. I thought, okay, maybe it was like the right coach, right manager with the right players, the right young players, kind of. The Rays continue to be good.
I don't get it.
They just continue to be good. They bring players like they had Chris Archer. I think they still have. I think he's made his return.
I'm looking at their depth chart right now because
they get players who are decent.
Team.
They're gone, and they find other players. David Price pitched for them one time. Blake Snell, as we mentioned before, they bring in a player. Player does really well. Goes on to do something else. Evan Longoria going. Doesn't matter. They just here we go.
All right, Chris Archer's not in the rotation.
Okay, I thought he had left. Maybe he plays for Pittsburgh. For Pittsburgh.
Just real quick, I'm going to read their starting rotation. You ready? Yeah. Tell me how many of these names you've heard before.
Okay.
Shane McClanahan.
No.
Drew Rasmussen.
No.
Luis Patino.
No.
Ryan Yarbrough.
Yes.
Michael Wacha.
Yes, played for the Cardinals.
that's their
only
rotation.
Reason I know him. That's it. And yet they find them. They're in first place in a very good division,
comfortably too.
Right, a very good division. I mean the Toronto Blue Jays are a decent baseball team, right? Boston should have no reason to stink. The Yankees have no reason to stink, and the Rays are comfortably ahead of those teams.
Yeah,
God bless them. All right, what's the dumb of the day?
The dumb of the day. Arch Manning.
Uh oh.
Found his way to Sanford Stadium this past Saturday, and Georgia fans lost their minds over it.
Did they really?
I got to back up. Maybe
I did not see this story. That is amazing.
Maybe you would know a recruit is coming, I guess, right?
For the love of Jesus, was he there to see South Carolina?
Yes, he was there to watch the game. He was invited by Georgia, with a couple
others. Was he there to see if he could play for South Carolina?
Oh, no. Sorry.
Because if he did, he wasn't impressed.
If it is, then you're losing your mind, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my
God. No, he was there. A bunch of other prospects were invited. So he took in the game after he probably toured the facilities, walked this place, walked the campus.
Sure.
But see, here's the part where I'm trying to figure out. Because, do you know when recruits are coming? Are you keeping tabs on them? The only reason why I ask is because there was a group of fans who painted their bodies that said, "We want Arch."
I think word gets around quickly. Like, it's probably a very badly kept secret.
Okay.
Because if you're bringing in Arch Manning, if you're the football team and you're bringing in Arch Manning, I think you would want people to know that. So that there would be you know what it's like? It's like when you work for a corporation. Like when I used to work in a corporate radio and they would say like the West Coast director of programming is coming and we would all clean our desks, right? Make our offices look nice, vacuum the floor a little bit. That's what it must be like. Like, Arch Manning is coming. Everybody be on your best behavior and welcome him with open arms.
Well, I mean...
Right?
Yeah.
Is that basically what you would do?
Yeah. It says one question on here. Who does A.D. Mitchell go to after the big touchdown catch? 5-star quarterback Arch Manning. Went right up to him. Like, you need to come here. That could be you.
Yeah, exactly. Never mind the guy that's throwing me the football now. He'll be gone by the time you get
here. Oh, God.
Arch Manning is living the perfect dream of young quarterbacks. He is being catered to like a 5-star athlete in a time where they can pay you money.
And you've seen pictures. I'll send you the photo of him. This kid is a little kid.
Yeah, what grade is he in?
He's like a junior.
Sophomore, junior,
he's
right?
He's a junior.
Oh, my goodness.
But the one of the photos they posted, I was like, God, this kid looks like he just, you know, got into high school.
I'm going to tell you something. I know family bond is strong, but if he goes to Georgia, Peyton Manning is never going to talk to his nephew again.
Well, Eli?
I don't know if Georgia Ole Miss is a rivalry, but I know Tennessee and Georgia is.
He can't go to Georgia.
He can't go to Georgia. His grandpa probably is like, he ain't going to Georgia.
Well, Nick Saban.
I had to deal with his family when Peyton went to Tennessee. I ain't dealing with this again.
Will Nick Saban even bother recruiting him?
That's a good question. He's got to make a phone call, right?
And that's probably why Lane Kiffin is just going to stay where he is, right?
Right. Oh, they all are. As soon as Arch makes, exactly. You never
Lane
know.
Lane Kiffin's just sitting there like, I'll recruit.
Because you know what the thing about Arch Manning is? Is you're right. He can go on all these trips, but in the end, family pull could just go, I'm going to Oxford, baby. Just like my grandpa.
Just like my uncle.
His dad went there too, but he didn't play football. Cooper.
Yeah.
So God bless him. All right. That's the good, the bad, and the dumb. Jared Dubin will join us later on this hour. Talk NFL as we continue at Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
When you need auto parts, O'ReillyAuto.com is just a few clicks away. They offer convenient options for you to get your parts quickly. Order online at O'ReillyAuto.com. Pick up for free at your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store. They'll even bring it out to you curbside. Or you can choose to have your parts delivered right to your door with free shipping on most orders over $35. Get your auto parts quickly with O'Reilly Auto Parts. Visit O'ReillyAuto.com today. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. We got Jared Dubin coming up. We'll talk some NFL with him. College football Saturday saw Florida and Alabama. That was one of the more epic SEC games I have seen in a while. It was outstanding.
Kind of back to Alabama Auburn when they were both good, right?
Yeah, and here's why. Because you can get really good games in the SEC, but Alabama was almost like the overriding parent of it all, right? Like, oh, that's cute that Georgia and Florida played a cool game in Jacksonville, but we still are on top. Or it's nice that Ole Miss did something cool against whoever. Or Tennessee played Kentucky. Or whatever. You can get these good matchups, but above it all was always Alabama. And this was a game in which Alabama was vulnerable. And Florida had opportunities to win that game and didn't pull it off. Now, I will say this. When I met my wife in the late 90s, Florida was Danny Werfel, Florida, right? And we've been married 24 years. And, you know, throughout that time, I've been really in part of the Florida Gator program. And she's just, you know, watches it every Saturday and knows the team and all that stuff. And I've usually been like, ugh. But now that my son goes there, I mean, I kind of lean towards them. But never... You know, maybe every now and then with the Zook years, I don't know. Will Muschamp had some bad runs. For the first time in a long, long time, a ranked Florida team lost a game at home in which everybody felt good about it. Let's just let that sink in for a second. Florida was ranked, and they lost a game at home, a place that's really hard to play. They have 91,000 people there in that game against Alabama. And they lost a game, and everybody is like, oh, well, no moral victories, but yeah, that was really good showing. That's not how it works at Florida. If you're ranked at Florida and you play a home game, no matter who you play, whether it's Alabama, whether it's anybody in the top five or whatever it is, you expect to win that game. It doesn't matter. And they could have won that game and they didn't, but they feel really good about it. Because, you know, like I texted my son afterwards, how was it? And he was like, electric. And he goes, but it was a good loss. He goes, it doesn't feel bad. Like it was entertaining and I thought we would get killed and we didn't get killed. But I also wonder, and this has happened to me with South Carolina a number of times, where the Gamecocks are hardly ever ranked. they used to be ranked under Steve Spurrier, but they're hardly ever ranked. But a lot of times they would be in games where it would be really close and you'd be like, wow, this is surprising. This game is closer than I thought. I thought they, this name your team, would be up by three touchdowns by now, and it's a three-point game. And when you lose those games, it really does sting because you feel like it is a lost opportunity, and you feel like you've been given some sort of gift by the sports gods that you didn't expect, which is being in a game a lot longer than you thought. And that's what happened with Florida. Florida looked like, okay, this Alabama team is good, but then they got some touchdowns, they hung on, you know, forced some mistakes, and couldn't quite capitalize on it, couldn't quite close the deal, and they lose. But that Auburn-Penn State game, that's when you realize what college football is, what it can be in terms of home crowd. The whiteout was spectacular, and it looked incredible on television, by the way. It looked crazy. But I told you, Penn State would be very excited to beat a team in the SEC that's even ranked a lot lower than they are.
Mm-hmm.
And they were very happy to win that game, and to beat a team like Auburn.
And another point to that, I am so happy that this was played at their house.
I agree.
I mean, I couldn't agree. There were so many people on Twitter saying, stop having these games in Dallas and Atlanta. Stop having them at neutral sites. I couldn't agree more.
I couldn't agree more.
I mean, sure, maybe, you know, where would you have had a neutral site game for Penn State? Like somewhere in Philly, maybe, or Pittsburgh? I don't know. Probably closer to Philly. But this is what it's supposed to be. You should have it in your own turf, your own crowd. I mean, yeah, like you said, I mean, the visuals of it were amazing.
Yeah.
Let alone the game. The game was awesome, too.
I agree. I think there's a time and place to have neutral site games. I think Jacksonville for Florida, Georgia, and the Cotton Bowl is these are fine. These are traditional.
Yeah.
They're fine. It's when these big promoters go, we want you and you, and oh, wouldn't it be awesome if we played at Jerry's World or Mercedes-Benz Stadium? It's like, no.
The perfect example is this. A few years ago, I don't remember who the home team was. I think it was Alabama, but Alabama against USC in Dallas.
Yes. Yeah, it was in Dallas, right.
Like, what's the point?
Yeah, I know. You know,
is it just because it's a big game, two marquee teams, and I don't know. It just didn't make any sense to me.
And I agree with you completely. And I think it's great, even for the visiting team, to just realize the adversity. And I'm sure Nick Saban left Gainesville telling his team, guys, these teams were playing. When we go on the road, it doesn't matter who we're playing. They're not messing around. Right, these are packed houses. Like, for some of you younger guys, this is what it's going to be like everywhere we go on the road in the SEC. Now, we may beat them, but they're going to bring their best effort, because if you are around these, if you've gone to college at a big time place, or you've been around, you live near a college that's got a big time thing, the whole week is geared to this. The whole atmosphere is geared to this, and I think it is good for teams to go to, for Auburn, for example, and I mentioned this last week, they never go up north, right? They never go north. They've only played three Big Ten opponents in the history of the school. The last one was 1931, the last time they played a Big Ten opponent at their place, right? They don't do this sort of thing. They don't. And Penn State said, yeah, this is a big deal. Yeah, we're ranked higher. We're in the top 10. They're not. But that's still a major SEC school with major talent, and it's a big deal if we win the game. And that was a fantastic game. I mean, that was
a lot of fun.
Thrilling to watch.
A lot of fun.
Tank Bigsby had a couple of touchdowns. He's a beast. I mean, it was fun. And Penn State, this is two major wins now for James Franklin at Penn State, going on the road to beat Wisconsin and then to win at home against Auburn. That's a big deal. I don't care if Auburn's ranked less. That is a big deal.
Are you,
to beat Auburn.
Are you talking about James Franklin, soon to be USC Trojan head coach?
Soon to be USC Trojan head coach, James Franklin? Yeah, maybe so. Jared Dubin's going to join us next. We'll get back to the NFL after an exciting, fun. We didn't even get to Tom Brady's five touchdowns, but we will next on Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
A lot of Week 2 action Sunday. Let's go to the Progressive guest line. Progressive making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at Progressive.com today. Jared Dubin joins us, CBS Sports. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Good. It is hard early in the season to really put a lot of meaning into victories and outcomes, but what do you take away from Baltimore's victory over Kansas City last night?
It's got to feel good for Lamar Jackson, right? I mean, he'd been 0-3 against them in his career, and obviously the game did not start off well for them considering he threw a pick six on that first drive, but... You know, to come back and win against that team in that way, I mean, it's really impressive, and that's what you got to take away from it, I think.
One of the other stories that coming out of week two is a lot of quarterbacks suffering some injuries, and Tua Tagovailoa went out in a shutout loss to Buffalo, and Miami is in a position to try to evaluate him and his fitting in with what they are trying to do and how they're building their team. How devastating is this if he's going to be out for some time?
Oh, I mean, it's obviously really devastating. They didn't get much of a chance to evaluate him last year just because he was in and out of the lineup and they weren't really building the offense around him anyway. You know, they brought in an offensive coordinator that was really familiar last year with Ryan Fitzpatrick and sort of built the offense that way. So, you know, to have him go out just 2 weeks into the season, it's you know, you're going to be halfway through his rookie contract and potentially not having even a full season of evaluation for him.
All right, let's stay in the division and let's go to the Patriots. All right, it was a battle of rookie quarterbacks and a lot more highlighted on Zach Wilson's 4 interceptions. But New England's defense, is that something that's going to help Mac Jones out? It looked pretty good.
Oh, for sure. I mean, you know, the defense 2 years ago obviously was, you know, one of the best in the league, if not the best in the league. And then last year they just had so many guys opt out and were playing so many, you know, young players and guys that were unfamiliar with the system that they weren't really able to get the same kind of results. Now, you know, they spend a bunch of money in free agency. Matt Judon, I believe, leads the league in pressures so far through 2 weeks. Josh Uche is right up there with him. And, you know, they bring back Hightower. They get, you know, after opting out. And, you know, despite not having Stephon Gilmore, the defense looks really good in the first couple of weeks. Granted, they've played Tua and Zach Wilson, so who knows if that'll keep up against, you know, more experienced quarterbacks. But so far, so good for them.
All right, let's go to Las Vegas because they're off to a 2-0 start. Crazy Monday night win against Baltimore and then beat Pittsburgh on the road, and the Steelers had some injuries on defense. But everyone's buzzing about Derek Carr. What did you make of what John Gruden's been putting together so far?
Yeah, I mean, Carr, I think, looks good. And to do that against, you know, two good defenses, I think. And, you know, you mentioned the injuries. Baltimore, obviously, has been dealing with a bunch of injuries on defense, too. And then Pittsburgh during the game had some as well. But, I mean... They're still very good defenses, and he's throwing the ball downfield a little bit more, which is nice because that's not something that they've been doing all that often in the past. So, I mean, the questions for me for the Raiders come mostly on defense, and, you know, they've looked pretty good there so far. You know, Max Crosby is just getting a million pressures on every snap, and if they can keep that up, then, you know, it's going to be easier for them to exceed expectations.
The Steelers on the other side, and I know the injuries on defense were daunting, but the offense, yet again, it's very vanilla. Matt Canada doesn't seem to be doing much with what he has.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's tough when you have a quarterback who is not really capable of throwing the ball downfield all that well anymore just because of his arm issues and his age and the combination of those things. And, you know, they decided that the way to fix their running game was to draft a running back instead of fixing their offensive line, and that's just not the way to do it. So I think they're going to struggle to find big plays on offense throughout the season.
Dallas gets a win on the road. They beat the Chargers. Look like they bounce back after their Thursday night game in terms of playing well but losing. In terms of that game in particular, Tony Pollard seems to be the running back. I don't want to make it sound like there's an issue there, but is there any reason for that?
Well, I think this is Pollard's third year in the league now, and in all 3 years, he's been better at breaking tackles and creating explosive plays than Ezekiel Elliott has. That's just the truth. Zeke's making $90 million, and he's guaranteed to be on the roster for at least another 2 years. So I don't think he's going anywhere. And, you know, Jerry Jones wants to sell a lot of Ezekiel Elliott jerseys. So I don't think he's going to suddenly stop getting the ball. But I do think they need to find a way to get Pollard more involved in the offense. You know, he only played 21 snaps yesterday, and he had 16 touches. You know, it might be better to just get him on the field more often instead of just giving him the ball every time he's out there.
In terms of one other game yesterday, Tennessee playing Seattle, Derrick Henry with 3 touchdown passes. Can we look at Tennessee differently? Does it look like they're better defensively, or do they still have some issues and just got away with one with a strong running game in the second half?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that the defense is what was up to par yesterday with offense. You know, they finally put some points on the board, and they were able to protect Tannehill a little bit. He made some nice throws to Julio Jones and a couple to A.J. Brown, and then obviously Derrick Henry. I mean, the guy's a runaway freight train if you give him literally any space in the open field. So the offensive line was better yesterday than it was in week one, and that allowed them to get back to, you know, actually making some plays offensively. I think they gave up, 30 points to Seattle. So it's not like the defense looked all that good.
On the flip side, we had so much fun with Jameis Winston in week one, and now he had no touchdown passes and interceptions in their loss to Carolina. What do you think the narrative is going to be with this guy going into week three?
He's still Jameis Winston, you know?
Yeah, that's like, right.
I think anybody that was expecting him to have suddenly been a different player after playing well in week one hasn't been paying attention to Jameis Winston over the years. This is what the guy does. He has a very high ceiling and a very low floor. He can create big plays, and that's true not just for his team, but for the other team. So that's kind of what it is. Like, I don't think there's really any change, or I don't think there should be any change in what people thought about Jameis after week one, and I don't think there should be any change about what they thought after week two. It's just that the people that did change their opinion about week one might have to change it back now.
The Denver Broncos are 2-0. They beat the Giants in Jacksonville. These are certainly not going to be NFL world beaters here. Do you see anything in the Broncos that gives any indication that they could be one of the teams in the AFC to contend with?
I think their defense is really good. You know, Von Miller has been playing really well. And they've been doing it essentially without Bradley Chubb, who didn't play in week one. And I believe he left yesterday's game with an injury after, you know, just coming back. And maybe he might be out for a little bit now. But, you know, the secondary is really good. Vic Fangio, obviously, is a really, really good defensive coach. And then having Teddy in there, I mean, they're not going to make mistakes offensively, which is really what you need with a defense that's that good and that style of football that they want to play. You know, obviously, it's going to be much more of a test if they play offenses that are capable of moving the ball as opposed to the Giants and the Jaguars. But, you know, getting off to a 2-0 start really helps. You know, those wins count. Nobody can take them away from them.
What did you make of the Indianapolis game against the Rams in terms of Carson Wentz's injury? A lot of people were, you know, social media is a dangerous place, speculating maybe it wasn't as bad, that Wentz was standing up on the sidelines. But Jacob Eason just was not able to get to rally the team. And if he's out for a while, do the Colts look somewhere else?
I don't know. I mean, they expressed confidence in Eason and Sam Ehlinger during the preseason, but that doesn't necessarily mean they actually have that confidence. And I wouldn't read much of anything into the fact that Wentz was standing up on the sideline despite being injured. You know, I've had my fair share of injuries myself and done a lot more than stand while having those injuries. And it doesn't really mean that much.
Jared Dubin again, CBS Sports, on talking about the NFL. Thursday night game with the Giants. In terms of how long do the Giants still continue to see where Daniel Jones is going? He seemed to have played well. It just, in the end, couldn't get a victory.
I think if it's up to Dave Gettleman, which it probably is, they'll see it through until they're not seeing it through anymore. You know, this is a guy that sort of bet his tenure with the team on this quarterback and this offense, and he has a skill that's very valuable in terms of his ability to make plays when things break down. The issue is he doesn't really have some of the other skills that you need, like accuracy and decision making, and I don't know, like, we saw Josh Allen take a big leap with those things last year. That's not typical. You know, it's especially players doing that in their third season. Typically, the big leap for quarterbacks comes between years one and two, and Jones obviously didn't have that happen last season. That doesn't mean it can't happen or will never happen, but it would be pretty unusual for him to suddenly become a much more accurate quarterback or a much better decision maker. And, you know, that's an issue in the NFL.
Jared Dubin again, CBS Sports. Appreciate your time. Thank you so much. We quickly went around week two.
Thanks for having me. Have a good day.
Absolutely. Jared Dubin, CBS Sports, bouncing around the league. Quote, buy and save on home insurance with Progressive's new home quote explorer only at progressive.com. All right, coming up. Yes, it was wins against the Giants and wins against Jacksonville. But the Denver Broncos did do something that's very, very important. I'll tell you what it is next on Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks to Jared Dubin for joining us to talk some NFL week number two. This hour of Wake Up Call presented by Rocket Mortgage. Need a mortgage that fits your life? Rocket can. All right, so I mentioned the Broncos. Do wins against the Giants in Jacksonville impress you? Probably not. But here's the thing that Denver has done. Yes, it's 17 games and the schedule is a little off, but the Broncos have won two games now on the road. And that's a very important thing. Yes, their schedule is going to get tougher. They still have to play the Chiefs twice, and the Raiders look like they're pretty good, and the Chargers will probably give them fits. But they've won two road games. And winning on the road, if you talk to NFL players, no matter who you play, is difficult. It's difficult. And if you can win enough road games, then you don't have to win all of your home games, even when it comes to very good opponents. Now, the Broncos have the Lions coming in, and they have Cincinnati coming in, and the Eagles coming in, and Washington coming in at home. So these, again, are very games that they, you know, should win. They'll play the Jets at home next week. So Denver's in a really good position to be one of those teams in the AFC that's vying for a wild card spot. If we kind of look at Kansas City and go, eventually they'll right their ship and win that division. Yeah, again, they're not beating the best of the best of the best by any means. But the reality of it is, when you start the season on the road, you need to win those games. And here's the other thing. One of those games was in Jacksonville in September. And it's really hot there. And it's hard to win there when it's really hot. Teams will tell you all the time. Even the good New England Patriots teams, right, would say how difficult it was to go to Miami when they had to play Miami in the early part of the season.
Yeah, that was against a Blake Bortles Jaguars.
Right? So anytime you'd go to Jacksonville, Tampa, Miami, and it's 100 degrees outside and it's still blazing humidity, and it's difficult, especially when you're in Denver and you're playing in, you know, you're practicing in cooler temperatures and it's not as hot in the summertime and whatnot, and you go play in deep, deep, deep humidity, right? They got this win. Now, granted, again, rookie head coach, rookie quarterback, you know, it's a game they should have won. But you never know. In the National Football League, things can get away from you. But they did win the first two games of the season, and both of those on the road, and those are important wins because Denver, playing in Denver and winning in Denver is hard with the altitude. And like I said, they've got a very manageable home schedule anyway. But, like, you know, they got the Ravens at home. That's going to be tough. I think the Steelers on the road could be difficult. Browns, obviously, difficult.
But see, them winning yesterday, I think that was another level of frustration for me as a Chargers fan. Because the Chargers are the only team in the AFC West that have lost.
Yeah, that's true.
Everyone else is 2-0.
Oh, no, Kansas City lost last night.
Kansas City, yeah.
Yeah, so they're 1-1. But Las Vegas is on a roll now.
Yeah, Vegas looks good.
They really beat Pittsburgh up. They did. I mean, they can run the ball great. By the way, Henry Ruggs is flying.
Yeah.
He's amazing.
And was it Darren Waller?
Darren Waller. Yeah. Steelers didn't have any answers for him.
No.
Yeah, they were trying to use Minkah Fitzpatrick. They had a lot of injuries. They were moving people around. TJ Watt went down.
When TJ Watt went down, I felt like the soul out of Pittsburgh was left with it.
Yeah, they were really struggling. Trey Turner spit in a guy's face.
Yeah.
And got ejected from the game.
What kind of suspension is that going to be?
Yeah, I don't know. They're not going to let you do that.
And it's like, in this COVID world we live in, you can't do that, right?
He did the thing where he said, somebody spit in my face, and there's no evidence of that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, great.
An eye for an eye, Tony.
Yeah. But, you know, we talk about the Raiders and, you know, Derek Carr has got, I mean, look, it's 2 weeks. I get it, but it's all we got. So forgive me. He leads the NFL in passing yards per game.
Yep. MVP.
MVP.
MVP. Now, will that scare Derek Carr?
I know.
You know, if we bring up the MVP talk, is he going to be, oh, God, I'm going to break a leg.
No, exactly. Don't mess with this. You know?
Keep it on Carson Wentz, please.
They looked really good. And by the way, as a Steeler fan, can I tell you, the Steelers never beat the Raiders. They never do. I think they've lost except six out of the last eight games against
them.
Except
one time.
Well, they did beat them in 1972. The Steelers are, I'll give you a little insight. The Steelers do two things when they were good. You know, they were really good. They would do two things that would drive me insane. One, they would never win on the West Coast. Never. And they played some crappy Raiders teams and would lose. They played some crappy 49er team once and lost. They go out west, they would lose. And the second thing that they would always do is there was always one game, didn't matter if it was home, away, or whatever, that they would lose to a team that they should have beaten by two touchdowns. They'd always let some bad team hang around just a little too long. This was not it. This was a game in Pittsburgh against a very good Las Vegas team that really took it to them and just completely outplayed them. And the Steelers have disappeared from that week one victory against the Buffalo Bills. All right, we'll continue. It's hour three. More football coming up next as we continue.